Welcome to this episode of the Garage to Main Street podcast. I'm your host, Bill Coates.
And I'm the co-host, Lacey Paxton.
On today's episode, we have Chad Knibbe, an investment sales agent and the president of Foresight Commercial Real Estate. He is here to talk about buying property, leasing property, what to do if you get stuck with property, commercial real estate specifically. So with that, Chad, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. Good morning. Thanks for letting me be a part of this. Sure. I've been in investment sales aspect of commercial real estate for about 15 years. I was with a large national firm before Foresight for about 13 years before that, all doing investment sales.
That's awesome. So Chad, if nobody knows, has a great story about one of his first jobs, and I didn't prep him for this beforehand. So there was a time that there had something to do with carrier pigeons. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, Chad?
Oh, gosh. You had to bring that up. Yeah, so my first job, I was 15. I couldn't even drive to this. Was in a big industry in the city of New Braunfels is tubing, where people would go and sit in inner tubes and float down the river. Well, my first job was working for a photography company, where we would take photos of people, you know, I mean, and then sell them the images, right? But this was a long time ago. I don't want to tell you how old I am, but digital photography didn't exist. And so from the time frame where we were taking the photos down to where the people, when they would get out of the river, was not really long enough to have film developed, but it was long enough to have slides developed. So what we would do is we would shoot the photos of these people, and then I would kayak out to them and then give them business cards with the frame, the roll number and the frame number that they had, and said, you know, if you're interested, you could look at slides and purchase these photos of you and your group that's coming down the river. So we had the problem is now we had, after we would go through a film roll, we needed to turn it into slides. Well, we needed the slides back at the place where they got out of the river. And so the owner of the company had a fleet of carrier pigeons outfitted with backpacks. And they would put the film rolls in the backpack and then just throw the pigeons up in the air. And they would fly back to the location where they developed it, which was right where these people got out. There'd be somebody waiting. As soon as a pigeon came in, they'd grab the film and develop it, turn it into slides, and then stick it out in the little booth out front with the light so people could get out and look at the slides, and if they want it, they could order it.
Okay. One, I wish somebody could see my face right now. Yeah. That is, like, probably the greatest first job ever.
I was about to say, you kids can't see this, but Lacey's jaw is on the floor.
That is amazing. Oh, my gosh. Well, one, my family loves to kayak, so that's epic, but... that's amazing. I could just see the little pigeons, like, with their little backpack.
And that's how Chad got started in commercial real estate. with carrier pigeons.
I would say less than 50% of the people I tell that story actually believe it. It's true. It really happened.
It's that kind of story. Okay, I promise this is really real. I promise it is. That's amazing. How long did you do that?
One summer.
Just one summer. Yeah, you were done.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But right. I bet you had a great tan.
Yeah.
All right, so getting to the real part of the meat of the podcast that has nothing to do with carrier pigeons. So kind of a little bit of a backstory on the podcast. The podcast is focused towards groups that focus towards individuals and entrepreneurs that sometimes end up with businesses that they are not really prepared to run. I know that there are a lot of you guys out there that have inherited commercial real estate, and you're going, great, I've got this business, I want it to make money, but I don't know anything about it. So, Chad, could you tell us a little bit about what a landlord can do to add value to a center? Say there's a situation out there where they have inherited a shopping center, we'll call it, you know, 70-80% full, maybe one suite, two suites that are available to lease. How can a landlord take that space and turn it into something that can produce income for them for the long term?
Yeah, you bet. So that's a good question. So I guess in order to answer that, it'd probably be easier for me to talk a little bit about how you value a property in the first place.
That'd be great.
That you can tell how to add value to it. So generally, The value of a center is broken down into two main categories. One is the income that it produces, or the cash flow that's out there. And secondly, its appreciation, or the increase of the property's value or equity that's in it, right? Those are the two main things. And so how do you add value to each one of them individually? Well, let's start with the cash flow. If you mentioned the scenario that you mentioned of 70-80%, that's an easy one, right? Because the more space that you can lease or have occupied, the more rental income you can generate from that. So the more cash flow you have, certainly the more value that's coming in. Other ways to increase cash flow that don't have to do with leasing a vacant space would be, I mean, obviously increasing the rental amount, right? So either that's increasing rental, and how do you do that? Well, you have to add some kind of amenity or value or reason why tenants would be willing to pay you more to be there, right? So you can increase value by improving the center in some way. You could also add square footage. So the same piece of land, say it's an acre or two, when you have a center on it, is their ability to add leasable area. That's another way to add it. And then secondly, not all centers, if you just get revenue, additional revenue in there, means more money in the end. So the other way to increase cash flow is to reduce your expenses. So you can either increase your revenue in some way or reduce your expenses, because that helps the profit. So that's the one way that you can do it, and lease up, adding amenities, something along that. The other division, it basically comes into the property's market value. Most properties have, most commercial properties that are out there are purchased or have commercial debt on them. So the equity comes into play. When an investor, let's step back a minute and say, when an investor, why would somebody purchase a commercial real estate asset? It's not like it's going to be a vacation home for them or a ranch for recreation, something along those lines. They're going to buy it to make money. So you can either make money based on the return or rental income that's in there, or you're hoping to get appreciation. Well, appreciation is going to come in through a couple of different ways. One, like we mentioned, when a person purchases an asset, he's expecting a return on that income that's coming in. The return is going to be based on the risk profile of that asset. So what does that mean? That is the ability for that property to continuously generate income, not just now, but in the future. You're not going to buy it just to sit there and hold it and then sell it, right? Because generally an asset is only going to increase in value if you can increase the rental income that's coming on there. So land is a different category. So how can you increase your appreciation? Well, a measurement of the risk profile that's out there, one of the ways to measure that is called the capitalization rate. And that's just an equation of a property value based on the income that it produces after expenses. So if a property has a lower risk profile, means that it, according to a status quo, if it is a lower risk, meaning that there is not a lot of future risk of that cash flow coming down. An example of that would be, say, a shopping center that has a whole bunch of short-term leases with tenants with business models that might be struggling and might not want to renew. There is risk of the occupancy of that center and therefore the income. Whereas if you look at something else, say a Walgreens, for example, that's likely to continue to generate income for a long period of time. So the risk profile of that is less. Back to the cap rate. A cap rate is a measurement of the return or risk profile of a shopping center. So an investor is generally going to be willing to take a lower return for a lower risk investment. So if you can create a property or revise or implement or improve your property to reduce the risk profile, you directly result in a improvement in the value. So I know I've been talking about a lot of abstract thoughts. Somewhere around, by changing the risk profile of the center, you change the cap rate, therefore the property directly in terms of its value. How do you do that? Well, one thing is the type of rent roll you have, right? Mm-hmm. The synergy between the tenants. How do you change the risk profile when looking at the tenants? Well, the stronger the tenants are, and that doesn't just mean national names, that means the lease guarantors. That means the actual performance of those units in there, the stronger that is, the lower the risk profile that's out there. The more the tenants have synergy with each other. Are all the tenants in there, do they drive traffic to each other? Do they compete with each other, which you might not necessarily want? Do they all cater towards the demographic of whatever neighborhood they're in, right? Are they all going after the same group of people so that when one demographic comes in to patronize this store, they're likely to want to go to the others? That kind of thing is going to drive the risk profile of the center. Is it maintained, right? Am I likely to have major capital improvement expenses in the short term and so forth? All of that affects the risk profile, which therefore influences the amount of money an investor would be willing to pay for the return you're getting. So back, summarize back that there's two main ways. One, you can increase the income or you can lower the risk profile. Both of those improve the value of a center.
So risk equals reward, always, kinda.
Yeah, generally, right.
Generally. Mm-hmm. Now, when looking at shopping center values, does placement on roads and things like that, does that change the value? Ease of access, like do you have to play Frogger to get there, or does that ever go into those factors where people are willing to pay?
Absolutely. That in itself doesn't necessarily increase the value. What that does is that makes the shopping center more attractive to tenants who will pay more rent to be there. That increases the value. So yeah, absolutely.
So Chad, earlier you mentioned some concepts that are high risk. And for individuals that may not be well versed in commercial real estate, what are some of those high risk concepts out there?
So there's a lot of different ways to interpret what risk means in terms of a tenant. But I would just say when you're looking at a tenant for a commercial building, whether it's industrial, retail, office, whatever, the riskier tenants are the ones that have a lower probability of honoring their lease obligations.
Okay.
So whatever that means, what aspect of that tenant might affect its ability to pay rent? So is it a brand new concept that's never been proven before? Is it an operator that doesn't necessarily know what they're doing?
Right.
Is it somebody that has no ability to, if their business model has a down month or two, it's likely to take them under rather than they have a war chest of money to weather the downturn? That kind of stuff all adds to the risk.
So I know when I started in leasing, one of the tenants that I got to renew was a Payday, where they do the loans, and they were writing in out clauses, like if regulations change, does that affect the quality of that lease? They'll sign a 15-year lease, but if regulations change, we can shut our doors and bye.
That's
no,
a great
no
point.
No harm, no foul.
Lease clauses are a whole other aspect that affects property values. That's one. GSA leases generally have the same thing. Mm-hmm. They have an annual ability to terminate the lease based on
GSA
legislation
mean?
Changes. General services.
General services. Yeah, okay.
Typically those are state.
Okay. Yes.
Or governmental.
Right.
Type of tenants that are out there. Co-tenancy clauses is another big one that's out there.
Yeah.
For example, you have one tenant that for whatever reason leaves or closes its doors or becomes dark. That could trigger clauses within other tenants that are in the center and affect their requirement to pay mm-hmm. rent or as much rent or reduces it. That has a domino effect that could be catastrophic for that because, as I mentioned, most centers have debt that are on them, right?
Right.
And your loan covenants with the bank require certain occupancies and debt coverage ratios or amount of income that comes in. So if one tenant fails, that can have a domino effect that triggers several other tenants, which all of a sudden puts you into default for your loan covenants.
Right.
So that's a big deal.
So are we going to scare people from ever wanting to buy this?
Are there any upsides to this, Chad?
You know, I will say, I've had a couple of tenants that have ended up buying the building they were in after I placed them there because it was better for them to be their own landlord. Mm-hmm. So I think that there is really still an upside. You just have to be willing to take the risk.
Yeah, so you want to be selective in the tenants that you put in there, meaning that you want to make sure, like I mentioned before, you have tenants that are correct for the neighborhood, correct mm-hmm. for the center, that get along with each other. that are capitalized well enough to be able to weather, you know, the what, you know, the period after the honeymoon period, right? And what do I mean by honeymoon period? That's when a business first opens and everybody wants to patronize it because it's new and interesting, right? That's the honeymoon period. Generally, your business drops off after that. That's the hard part, right? So if they can weather the area after the honeymoon downtime, so if they have a war chest out there, if they have the financial savvy of putting a business plan together, you know, have they thought through what this is going to look like to ramp up their business? Is it a proven business model? One of the favorite types of tenants that we look for isn't necessarily a national tenant. It could be a successful one unit operator, somebody who has a business model that's proven its success in one location and then wants to expand, which is also could be risky because you want to be able to understand if they have the business savvy to know when not to expand too fast and get spread too thin. As you guys both know, one of the most important things with expanding your business is putting the right processes and management staff in place. You can, even if you have the money, if you expand too fast, you don't put the right people in place and set up your processes.
You can't be in both places at the same time.
So there's, it sounds to me like there's a lot of risks to owning and running commercial real estate. Why do people invest in commercial real estate versus just putting that money in the stock market and letting it appreciate?
I guess that's a good question.
Why don't you just go to Las Vegas?
That's right.
It's about the same. No, it's not. I'm just kidding. So two things. One, the stock market is famous for its volatility, right? It has the ability to go up fast and it has the ability to go down fast. And so there are probably more people, just like in Vegas, that have lost money in the stock market than have gained it, that try to time the market. If you're in it for a long time, it's different. But the commercial real estate industry, if you look at returns on average, which is what you have to do for investments, long-term holds, if you look at long-term holds, commercial real estate as an asset class outperforms basically all of the other primary investment classes that are out there in terms of long-term. You, not only do you have a good cash flow, but you combine that with the appreciation, plus you can combine that with your equity buildup by paying down the debt that's on it, right? Mm-hmm. So you can leverage more safely in real estate than you can leverage in securities, right? So you get the benefit of all three of those that are going through there. And I'm not even considering timing the market for cap rate arbitrage and that kind of thing, just in general that's out there. Plus, it's a little bit less risky in the fact that you have hard assets backing your investment. In securities, you literally can lose 100% of your money, right? I mean, you can buy securities and buy a stock and lose all of it. At least with real estate, granted, let's say you bought it for cash, right? Because you can lose it all in real estate as well. But if you buy an asset for cash, even if the businesses that are in there completely fail and there's zero income, there's still a value to the real estate. It's not going to be worth zero, at least. So that's a little safer as well.
Absolutely, because even if the building didn't work for somebody, there's already the improvements. They've got the water lines. They've got everything they need there. So there's significant value, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Versus just, I don't know, a stock. The stock market scares me. So I'm like negative Nancy when it comes to that. So I firmly believe in buildings and land more than throwing my money. Like, just put it on black or whatever. Whatever you do in Vegas. I'm also not good at gambling. So.
I'm right there with you. So you've mentioned that a lot of the commercial landlords have a mortgage like you have on your home. How does the mortgage affect how you evaluate a deal? Specifically, say a tenant comes to you, if you're a landlord, hey, why can't, you're asking say $20 per square foot, why can't I get this at 10? You know, the one down the street is, you know, cheaper. Mm-hmm. How does your mortgage affect the decisions that you make as far as a lease goes?
No, that's a great point. So yeah, they call it leverage for a reason. I mean, you're basically amplifying everything that has to do with an investment if you apply debt to it. So you amplify the risk, you amplify the complications, and you amplify the return if it's successful, right? So it's definitely leverage in every sense of the word. But banks put in a lot of requirements and restrictions, and it varies from lender to lender. On the easier side, the commercial banks, all the way up to securitized debt, regarding how many restrictions you have on there. As I kind of referred to earlier, one of the big ones is the more sophisticated, larger national banks and the securitized loan programs have covenants that require a certain occupancy of your center, or they'll have a covenant that requires a certain debt coverage ratio. And what does that mean? The debt coverage ratio is the amount of income that you have in relation to your annual debt service, right? Generally, it's going to be a number over one, a whole number. You know, on the lower side, that could be 1.2, right? So your income is 20% more than your debt, or it could be up to 1.6, 1.8, something like that. But generally, if for whatever reason your income falls below that, you're at risk of breaking those covenants. And so when that happens, then the lender has a lot more authority to step in and start to control that, which you don't really want.
Right.
Right. So that's a risk in there. Plus, I mean, depending on the amount of leverage you have in there, you might be restricted from too much variation in the leases. Like, for example, I mean, those same kind of lenders will put requirements in there as to the type of the lease. They might not allow certain structures, like a lot of the bigger lenders on retail, maybe even office in some cases, are requiring that you have leases that allow you to pass on the fluctuating operating expenses onto the tenant. Right, they're requiring those leases to be triple net versus gross because it's a lower risk for them as a lender.
So what's the difference between a triple net and a gross lease?
The fluctuating operating expenses, which are going to include property taxes, property insurance, and then common area maintenance. Those are generally the ones that are out there. And then, of course, the admin expenses to manage that. Those fluctuate from year to year, right? Okay. They're not like rent. In a gross lease, that amount is added to the set figure that the tenant pays. And it doesn't fluctuate. That's just what you pay, mm-hmm. right? In a triple net lease, it's the expenses are the same, right? Whatever it costs to run the center is the same on a gross lease or a triple net lease. But in a triple net lease, those expenses are then passed on to the tenant. And then whatever they are, they're estimated at the beginning of the year. Like, we think the operating expenses as a whole are going to cost, if we break it down by the square footage of the center, about $10 a square foot for the year. Then at the end of the year, they reconcile the books. Well, it actually only cost $9 a square foot. But since our budget was 10, the tenants have been paying into an escrow account all year long based on the $10. And so now that it's $9, they reconcile that, meaning they reimburse the tenant the extra dollar
that's
out there.
It's like being Santa. Merry Christmas. Here, yeah, we're going to give you money back.
That's true. Sometimes it's the other way. The expenses end up being $11,
right?
And they have to reimburse it. But that's what it is. And generally, those rental rates aren't the same, right? You look at on par would be a hypothetically speaking, let's say you have an $18 rental rate that's triple net. That same rental rate on a gross lease would be $28 if your operating expenses were $10, right?
Right.
It's not any more. The difference there is the risk or benefit of the varying operating expenses are passed on to the tenant. So if the operating expenses go down, the tenant benefits. Right, because it's less. If they go up, then you know nobody. It basically reduces the cost of the lender.
But the landlord has
risk.
No reason to try to make those costs higher. They're always correct, trying to keep their taxes down, keep their landscape
so
down.
Like, that's a great. I'm glad you brought that up because that's kind of an area I think of misunderstanding that's out there. You can say that if all of the expenses are passed on to the tenants, what incentive does the landlord have to keep those in check?
I know, because if there's vacancy, they're picking up that part of the cost.
Exactly.
So they don't want to pay any more for vacant space than they have to.
That's
they're already
right.
paying a note on it, so they don't want to pay any more.
There you go. That's exactly right. And
also, Lacey for the win.
They also have to stay competitive,
right?
It's not like a shopping center owner can charge whatever rental rate they feel like, right? They have to be competitive because there are other places tenants can go with different amenities, different locations, that kind of thing. So it has to stay within reason if they want the center to be successful in the first place.
They can charge whatever they want, but they might have a really pretty vacant building that they're paying everything on.
That's exactly.
Super unfortunate when that happens.
So are all office buildings and shopping centers successful? Do they all make money?
Yeah. No. Yeah, that was funny because, I mean, my career for 15 years has just been investment real estate. And I probably the first 4 or 5 years in the business, I just assumed that. I assumed that, you know, you buy a commercial real estate, you're going to make a lot of money and it's going to be successful and it'll be beautiful. And I have been shocked by the percentage of investments that are out there that that are, and everybody has a different opinion or measurement of what success is. But I would say definitely, I would say more than half of the transactions that I've seen never live up to their pro forma. They never live up to their expected returns that are in there. It's unbelievable once you actually start to look at the real numbers that are in there. But a lot of that is because, and this is just my opinion, right, from what I've seen, a lot of that becomes the people that built it did not have the end desirability of the tenant in mind, right? I think a lot of the stuff that gets built, somebody acquires a piece of land or inherits a piece of land or has extra land left over from something that they bought for a different use. I'm like, well, I wonder what I can build there. And so they go to an architect or an engineer and they get some advice. Well, you could probably build a commercial building and you could fit it in here. And if you oriented it like so, then you might be able to squeeze in a little bit more leasable area. I'm like, okay, let me talk to a real estate agent. What are rents out there? And they get an idea of where rents are and they say, okay, that sounds good. Let's build it, with no real understanding of the tenant's desire to be there, right? The dynamics of the market. And so there's a lot of centers, you don't realize it, that from the time they are built to the time they are torn down for the next use, never make money, right? You just think that they are, because every now and then they'll have tenants. They might even be 90, 100% full for a short period of time, but that is not enough to make up for all the times that it was vacant.
Right.
So yes, no, they don't at all, right? If you're going to look at getting into it, or certainly if you're going to develop it, always start with the tenant demand in mind. Build what is in demand for tenants and make sure that you can build it at a place to where the rents are going to be in line. And if you're going to buy something, certainly look at its occupancy and performance history.
So I mentioned this on our first podcast. I came from working from a developer who did all sorts of things. We did retail. We did service buildings for the government. We did office buildings. He'd done it all. But the first thing he would always do is he would just go sit in his truck on a piece of dirt. And then when I started, I was young and sitting still was still not my forte. So we'd sit there and I'm like, what are we doing? He's like, watching, looking, feeling. Okay. And now I get it, because he wanted to see, are there people here? Where are they turning into? Can they get to this piece of land? Could I really make it what I want it to be? And it was kind of just that very first, that first step, which when people have extra land, they're like, oh, I can build 5,000 square feet if I face it this way. If I face it the other way, I can build 10. I'm going to build the 10. But they never sat and thought about, what's it going to look like from the street? How are they going to get
it? Does it have a drive-thru?
Can you get two drive-thrus? That's our favorite question. I need a drive-thru. Well, I need $1 million.
That's right.
So, but no, that's just interesting that so many people, it's an afterthought to do a commercial real estate building.
So I'm glad you brought that up, Chad. What are some things that investors that are looking to get into real estate should look for when they're purchasing, not just dirt to develop, but maybe a building that's already been there? Maybe they've got a business that's in the building and they're going, hey, maybe I should buy this. What are some things that they should look for kind of high level before they enter into commercial real estate?
Yeah, easiest thing to be would be the long-term performance history of the tenants in that center. Right. Interview them if you can. If any of them, and this is only occurs in retail, and it's a very small percentage of the tenants in retail that do it, but some of them report sales, okay, right, their performance figures. Certainly ask for that every time that you can get it, because that's very telling. You want to make sure that they're in a healthy performance ratio. And so that's measured in what's called a rent to sales. And it is basically the amount of rent, or you can look at it as total occupancy costs and include the triple nets that are in there, in as a percentage of their sales. right? So depending on the industry, that percentage varies a lot. That can be on a very healthy, the lower the percentage, the healthy, right? So you want to be, ideally you want to be in all single digits on that, right? If you get into the double digits, the lower double digits are fine depending on the industry. You start getting up into the, you know, the upper teens, then that's the risky. That's kind of the red flag range. It's out. And it varies. I mean, I want to emphasize it varies from industry to industry. But that's a big deal. Find out how long spaces, if they've become vacant, how long they were vacant. That's a good indication of tenant demand to be in there. Understand the market, the competitive set. Is there three more shopping centers in the same block that are under development, that are being permitted? You might not even know that they're happening there. Right. And is that going to affect your ability to retain tenants? Like, are they going to have a nicer building with more amenities and a better location for the same rent you are? What's that going to affect the center that you're looking at? Well, your rents are probably going to go down, you know, and maybe your occupancy and so forth. So just understanding the center's historical performance and its ability to compete in the future. Mm-hmm. Everything outside of that is subjective. Yeah. Like, what's a good value for that? It all depends on your risk tolerance, the risk profile of that center, and the amount of return you're willing to take based on the value of purchasing. And that's varies, again, for everybody that's right out there. But understanding that center's ability to perform moving forward is key.
So all of this to say, I'm gonna just say it. The first thing would be probably to find somebody like yourself or someone on your team that knows more about commercial real estate. I do leasing.
Right.
I pretend like I know stuff about investment sales, but I really don't. I know a little.
So leasing, I think, is the ground zero for information. Absolutely, if you're out looking for a commercial real estate investment that's out there, find out who the active leasing people are for that product type in that submarket and engage them to help you for that, because their information is going to be, because what's likely going to happen is you're not going to be able to ascertain the performance of the tenants that are in there, right?
Right.
So you're going to need somebody that has the historical knowledge of that submarket and has been dealing with tenants coming in and out of there and knows that. And the people who are doing leasing and talking to tenants and trying to make deals done are the best that are out there.
And then they can probably point that person to someone like you who knows how to run all of the analytics and figure out, is this a good deal? Why would I buy this one over this one?
Yep.
Right?
Yep, exactly. We can help explain and understand the risk profile. We can run cash flow models and help them out through all that. So, yes.
Lots of spreadsheets.
If they want them. Yeah, absolutely.
That's my favorite. I love it. Oh, goodness. Okay, what other questions do you have?
So, Chad, we want to focus a little bit on you. These are
our standard questions. Everybody gets them.
Okay. So, what books are you reading right now?
Okay, so it's funny that you asked. I'll just tell you exactly what I'm reading.
Harry Potter.
There's a new book out, because I have four small children, right? So there's a new book out by Dave Ramsey and Rachel Cruz, and I forgot the title of it, but it has something, Raising Smart Money Kids, something
yes,
like that.
I got an email on it this week.
Yeah, it's great. Okay. Highly recommend. That's
it's
good.
On our list.
There is a book out by a commercial real estate broker coach called Blaine Strickland,
okay,
and his book is called Adapt. He's just, you know, theorizing and postulating on what the commercial real estate brokerage industry will look at in 5 or 10 years, okay, along those lines. And then I generally have probably 7 or 8 audiobooks that I'm, you know, have halfway done at any given time of various subjects.
So are you reading Smart Money, Smart Kids?
Yep.
That's okay. It. Yeah. Good book. I haven't read it yet.
Do you listen to any podcasts?
It varies. So I'm in an audiobook kick right now. But my favorite podcast by far has nothing to do with commercial real estate. But I'm going to tell you anyway.
That's awesome.
It's called StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
Okay.
I absolutely love it. Yeah, these guys, I guess they're journalists, researchers, or what. But they will go and take a topic of something that's just interesting and then research it in great detail and write an article about it. And then they'll just have a podcast of them talking about it. It's very interesting. They go into far more detail than you would expect.
What is something we should know?
Oh, man.
All the things?
Yes. I mean, there's thousands of topics on there, and they're all fantastic.
So, now, I have a 14-year-old daughter who likes to do all sorts of research on all the things. She knows way more about the Hindenburg than one should ever know. All sorts of different things. Would this be appropriate? Like, could she listen to this?
Yep.
Awesome. Fantastic.
She would love it. They're entertaining.
She's a reader, so, you know, it would be nice for her to have something else. Got a book in her nose.
What is your favorite business book of all time?
That's tough, right? Because if it's a business book or is it personal productivity? So,
are those not hand in hand? I feel like that.
Well, that's why I kind of want to ask the question. So,
yes.
There is a productivity coach named Darren Hardy, and he's got a book called The Compound Effect. And it's not necessarily anything to do with commercial real estate, but it's a lot of great concepts that I've really enjoyed reading.
Fantastic. Oh, this looks very much like the cover of a book I read too. So I'm like, I wonder if it's the same guy.
Have you ever had a mentor? Who was your mentor, and what did you learn? What's one lesson you learned?
So I've had a handful of it. I mean, yeah, you have to be thankful and look for mentors anywhere you can.
Sure.
I would say I've had several mentors in my brokerage career, but probably the most recently and most impactful was a local developer here in town named Larry Baumgartner. And he has been very influential to me in the way that he approaches the business and in his kind of the way that he just approaches life. And I've a lot of wisdom in that gentleman, and I've really enjoyed my time there. I don't want to go into detail.
That wouldn't be fair.
But, I have a lot of gratitude towards the kind of the information that he's expressed to me, and furthering the career and getting into commercial real estate and starting a brokerage firm. You know, that kind of stuff. He's been really good.
All those big grown up things. Okay, so you mentioned earlier you have 4 children. So tell us, like, your family, how ages, what do they do?
Yeah, so I've got 4 children. My oldest is 10. The second daughter is 8. The third daughter turns 5 next week, and then I have a son that's going to turn 2 next month.
Woohoo! A son, finally.
Yeah, I know.
daughter. That's fantastic. So you and your wife are incredibly busy all the time.
Absolutely.
That's very fun.
Awesome. Well, I think that's all the questions we have. Is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap this episode up?
No, thanks. I know that we talked a lot about the risks, you know, of commercial real estate investing. And it's important to have a healthy understanding of the risk that's in there, so you go into it eyes wide open. But it's still a good and viable asset class and an investment category. And I certainly want to recommend you do that. And, We did a lot of generalizations. There's certainly ways that you can make a lot of money and have very little risk in that. But obviously, I've my career surrounds investment sales of real estate, so I am a fan.
Well, we're a fan of you. And thank you for coming and hanging out with us this morning.
And if you have any commercial real estate questions, feel free to reach out to Chad or any of his team at Foresight. They'd be really happy to help you with valuations, what to do next, anything related to commercial real estate. Those guys are a plethora of knowledge and would be, like I said, more than happy to help out.
He's got a great team.
He does. Awesome. Well, thank you for your time, Chad. We appreciate having you on this episode. And good luck to you in your commercial real estate.
Thanks a lot.